is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Make it competitive and give them hostile environments to be a part of, to be able to have to deal with and navigate themselves through open gyms. You start to see people's mental toughness, and because they can't win a game that day, or you start to see kids break down and have attitudes and fizzle out, gives you an opportunity to teach those kids when it really doesn't matter.
Jordan Duke is the boys basketball head coach at Lutheran West High School in Cleveland, Ohio. He led the Longhorns to a 17-7 record this past year in his first season. Duke spent the previous 6 years as the head coach at Cleveland Central Catholic High School, where his teams had one regional championship appearance, 3 regional semifinal appearances, 4 district championships, and 5 district championship appearances. Duke has amassed a record of 124-49 as a head coach, and has helped several of his players to the collegiate level. He's coached 7 NCAA Division I players, 5 NCAA Division II players, 4 NCAA Division III players, and 9 junior college players. In the 2014-2015 season, Duke also held the role of associate head coach at Cuyahoga Community College, where his duties included game planning, scouting, practice planning, recruiting coordinator, and organizing youth camps. Duke played his high school basketball for powerhouse St. Peter Chanel. He was a 3-year starter who played in 1 OHSAA Final Four tournament. Duke was a 2-year first-team All-North Coast League and received OHSAA All-State Honorable Mention in Ohio as a senior. He graduated from Cleveland State University with a Bachelor of Arts in Organizational Leadership. Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Jordan Duke, head boys basketball coach at Lutheran West High School in the state of Ohio.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoop Heads Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coach, do you struggle with building a championship culture, getting your players to communicate on the court, maximizing your practice time, and bringing out the best in all your players? We all struggle in at least a few of these areas, and that's why over 1,500 coaches a year from all levels of play attend a summer or fall PGC course to learn these things. And coaches consistently say spending a week at PGC is the most useful and beneficial investment they've ever made in their coaching career. At your PGC course, you'll attend all the classroom, video, and court sessions, just like the players. If you're ready to take your coaching and your team to new heights next season, go to pgcbasketball.com, find a summer or fall course near you, and sign up. That's pgcbasketball.com. Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Jordan Duke, head boys basketball coach at Lutheran West High School in the state of Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined by the head boys varsity basketball coach at Lutheran West High School here in Cleveland, Ohio, Jordan Duke. Jordan, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Hey, thank you so much, Mike, for having me.
Excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving in, learning a little bit more about your story. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about your first experiences with the game that you remember.
Yeah, no. I went to a public school in the inner city of Cleveland called Harvey Rice High School. And I started, you know, loving the game there just because I saw older people playing, you know, in the gyms and, you know, in my local recreation centers. I saw, you know, older kids playing. And I just really felt like I wanted to do the same things that they did as they were playing. And that kind of motivated me to start playing the game of basketball and learn how to play the game of basketball. So it started there. And as I, you know, grew older, my parents took me out of public schools and put me in private schools. And I started playing organized basketball a little bit more. And we started winning. And I really started loving the feeling of winning and being a part of a team. And so that kind of just, you know, propelled me to continue to work harder and you know, get into different arenas of basketball and start learning more and more about the game.
When you think back to that time as a kid, where did you go to play? Who were you playing with? Did you spend more time practicing on your own, or were you playing more pickup basketball? Just what was your experience like as a kid, let's say in the middle school era?
Yeah, so I was going to Woodhill Park, which is kind of almost, if anyone's familiar with Benedictine High School, it's kind of right up the street from Benedictine High School. And I went with my friend sometime. I went with my brother sometime. And, sometimes I went by myself. And, you know, I always found myself, you know, watching just older guys play. You know, everyone has them in their areas, rec legends and people who are, you know, known at the park and known for, you know, playing at the park. And, you know, those guys are kind of the guys I just kind of was looking up to at that time to play. And, you know, you had to be good to be on the court out there. And so as I grew older, I started, you know, shooting by myself. I would get kicked off the court and have to watch. And I enjoyed that as much as being on the court. So, I mean, those things just made me want to come back every day to be able to prove to those older guys that I was able to, you know, play the game of basketball.
Growing up in the LeBron era of basketball here in Cleveland, how much influence did that have on your feelings for basketball, if any?
It really didn't have. LeBron may be a few years older than me, I want to say. Maybe, what is LeBron, 37 or something like that?
Yep.
He's a few years older than me, but I was more of a, you know, Jordan and Kobe fan, like looking at those guys and watching those guys play and how those guys, you know, matriculated through the NBA and their careers and everything like that. Like, I was more of a fan of those guys. Now, don't get me wrong, LeBron James was, you know, a stud around here, and he was always, you know, a guy that everyone wanted to go see, and it was hard to see him, and you heard so much about him and everything. But like me actually like being mesmerized by someone, I think it might have been more so Kobe and Michael Jordan.
Greatest ever? Greatest ever. Who is it?
Greatest ever is Michael Jordan, and I debate daily about this at work. So,
good answer. All right, give me your best arguments. I love it because I've had this conversation numerous times with people. I don't have it on a daily basis, but on the podcast, we've talked about it a bunch of times. Anybody who listens regularly knows my feelings about Jordan. So I'm just curious to hear, give me your case.
Yeah. So, you know, in my mind, my opinion, I think that, you know, it's more so about mindset for me. And it's more so about, you know, how you impact, you know, the everyday of your team, you know, like, and I think Jordan, it was more of a, you know, a mindset guy that was just, you know, so dominant every single day, you know, like, and I'm not saying LeBron isn't, but from what I saw and what I know and what I've looked up and read and been a part of, like, you know, it's tough to have that mindset every day of just, you know, wanting to be the best all the time. And I think Jordan, you know, being able to win six rings and, you know, three back to back at one point in time, then three back to back at another time, like, it's extremely hard. Now, the argument is that the competition wasn't as good. You know, the argument, arguments are, you know, there's no way that, you know, Michael Jordan can play in this day and time. And then my argument, of course, is there's no way, you know, LeBron will be able to play in that era of time. You know, like, I mean, it's always, you know, both sides have great arguments. And at this point, I think it's more so preference and what you want to, do. And I think, you know, Mike was a guy who, really wanted to, you know, prove every single night that, you know, I'm the best at what I do and I'm going to be the best for the rest of his life at basketball. And I love that mindset. I love hearing the stories and watching the stories of, you know, people not liking him in practice and people not wanting to be around him in practice and because of how hard he pushed them and, you know, him, you know, demanding excellence out of the last guy on the team for them to get to what they needed, you know? And I think that mindset is kind of resembles who I am and who I always wanted to be and who I'm becoming. And I love being able to push people. I love to be able to, you know, put people in uncomfortable situations and, you know, put myself in uncomfortable situations to be able to see and get the most out of it. And I think that's who Mike was.
I love the answer of mindset because for me with Jordan, it always comes down to you can go through and you can list all the championships. You can list all the scoring titles. You can go through all those tangible things that you can point to on a piece of paper. Like you can do all that. But to me, it comes down to number one, he was a guy who, even though he was the best, is the best, never took a play, a game, 2 weeks. He just never took any time off. On the floor and on both ends of the floor. And to me, that sets him apart from just about everybody who's played the game. That mentality of I'm coming at you every single second, practice, games, a meaningless game in February or game 7 of the NBA title. Right. For sure. For sure. Yep. That competitiveness never turned off. And that to me is a huge piece of it. And then the second thing that I always come back to is I've watched a lot of sports in my life, and when I think of my experience sitting down and watching Michael Jordan play basketball, there has never been a guy that I have watched that I had no doubt what the outcome was going to be when he was going to take the last shot or when it was an important game or whether or not this guy was going to come through. Now, did his team lose sometimes? Sure. Did he sometimes miss a game-winning shot? Sure. But when those things happened, I was stunned beyond belief that like, oh my God, I can't believe he missed that shot. Going into those final plays or that big game, I always felt like Jordan is going to find a way to get it done. There was never any doubt in my mind. And then again, 90% of the time, that came to fruition. I've never watched another athlete in any other sport. I guess the only guy that's come close to that is Tiger Woods back in his complete heyday when he was just going crazy where you felt like he was going to make every putt and just come through. But even Tiger never reached the level of Jordan with me where I was just like, he's not going to fail. And that to me is what stands out when I think about him. In addition to all the things that, again, you can list on a piece of paper, it still comes down to that mindset, that mentality, that intangible thing that he had that I just don't think is replicable, from the competitiveness to the ruthlessness to just the desire to win at all costs and do whatever it takes from an effort standpoint, a competing standpoint, and an energizing teammate standpoint. I just think he's hands down the best basketball player that I've ever seen. And let's put it this way. If I was starting a team or I had to win one game or I had to have one best season, there's no question that Jordan's the guy.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Let's go to your high school experience. Give me what's your favorite basketball memory from high school when you think back?
Oh, man. I played on a small school. I went to St. Peter Chanel High School. Shout out to all the Firebirds out there. I went to this small school, St. Peter Chanel High School in Bedford, right across the street from Bedford High School. And we had a graduating class of 67 kids, and you know, we competed so hard on a yearly basis in almost every sport there that I can remember. And And when I was a junior, we had no idea about anything, basically, you know, like we were just listening to our head coach and our coaches and finding, you know, and playing the game that we loved. And, you know, that year we end up, you know, going to the state tournament in the Final Four in high school. And, you know, I end up hitting a big shot in the regional final to help us to win against a Malvern team that was maybe 23-0 or 24-0 or something at that time. And, you know, it was a great feeling to be able to just do that for my teammates, you know, and some of those teammates to this day are my still best friends. And, you know, looking back on those times with those guys are so memorable I'm able to recap a lot of those memories of those basketball seasons, you know, with those guys. And that's some of the same things I try to tell my guys now is that, you know, you're going to remember these seasons and have memories, you know, for the rest of your life. And I remember the shot like it was, you know, tonight, you know, like it was yesterday. And, being able to have those moments and share those moments with my, teammates and my friends, you know, that was big. We ended up losing in the Final Four to a team called Worthington Christian. We didn't play our best game, but it was a great experience being able to be the last, you know, four teams standing in, you know, in Division III or IV or whatever we were, you know, like, and those memories right there are just priceless, man. Like that whole year was just priceless. We were winning, you know, we had a great chemistry with the guys that we had playing, and it was something that really made me always want to be a part of something, you know, like a team, you know, a bond or something like that. That's what kind of made me really want to always be a part of that because of, you know, those memories.
Is that where the coaching bug comes in?
A little bit. You know, as my senior year came, I got benched as a senior from starting, and our head coach played another guy who's one of my good friends, one of my best friends to this day, he ended up playing him over me. And I end up was like the sixth man coming off the bench my senior year. And, you know, that was something that I had to deal with internally and deal with and figure out, you know, what I was doing wrong and how I was doing it wrong. And, you know, that kind of built some character in me to still be able to, you know, play the game at a high level and still have love for the game, even though things weren't going the way I wanted them to go, you know. And those are just memories that stick with me that help me coaching to this day.
How often with your players do you cite experiences that you had personally as a player when you're talking to your team?
I usually, you know, I like to have a lot of like one-on-one conversations with my guys. Like, I never want my guys to feel like I'm just coaching basketball. You know, like I never want those guys to feel like, you know, I'm only here from, you know, 3:30 to 5:30, or I'm only here for game days and I'm only here for workouts. I want them to truly believe that we can talk about whatever they want to talk about. And so I try to stay away from, you know, during practices and games, telling them what I did or what I went through in those moments. And I like to make those moments about them and how they can, you know, fight through it. And, you know, when we have our one-on-one conversations, just about life, that's when I like to really bring up, you know, some of the things that I went through and some of the things that I went through growing up and all of those good things, to being able to, you know, really relate to them as to what they may be going through. And I think that helps a lot more, for them, knowing that I'm able to share my experiences that aren't always good.
When do you get the opportunity to share those conversations? When do you have the time to be able to build that in and be able to have those conversations and share those experiences with your players? Is that quickly before practice? Is that after practice? Just how do you go about making sure that you get a touch on your guys and are really having those deep, meaningful conversations where you can build the kind of relationships that you're talking about?
Yeah, no. You know, I work in the building, and I have worked in the building at both schools that I've been at. And I think those times when they come in to eat lunch with me, or they come in to, you know, after school, right before we work out or practices, or if we're in the off season and we're not doing anything, or, you know, if they are in a study hall situation, you know, like I always try to find those times to really, you know, talk to them about life and growing as a young man and those good things. I think, it's tough to find those times always. So you kind of have to make those times to talk to them about that stuff, because you get so caught up in, you know, the everyday year to year, you know, schedule of things. You really lose focus and time on really getting to know your kids and talking to your kids. So I think, I find time doing it during the school day, right before the school day, or right after the school day, or after practice, or right before practice, you know, like I try to have those conversations to give them, you know, just some reassurance and some security that, you know, I haven't always done everything right either, you know, like, and it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah, that's important to show your human side, right? I think that's something that if you think of maybe the stereotypical coach in the past, it wasn't really done that way. You had kind of that my way or the highway, fire and brimstone type of coach, where you weren't building that relationship. You weren't talking about, hey, here's mistakes I made. Here's some things that maybe you can learn from my experiences. And that, to me, that's definitely an improvement that has happened in the coaching profession over the last 15 to 20 years, where we just have so much more of that relationship building and pouring into kids, not just as basketball players, but really getting to know them as people and really investing them as students, as athletes, as family members, just really getting to know your kids, I think is something that's improved tremendously in the coaching profession. And you talked about being able to have those conversations during your time in the school day. How do you look at being in the school on a daily basis? I think about coaches that are not in the school and how difficult that must be. I know when I was an assistant varsity basketball coach and I was at the elementary school, and even for me, being in the school district as a teacher but not in the same building with our players, I always felt like I was the last person to know, because our high school varsity coach was in the building, our JV coach was in the building, and then I was literally 100 yards across the parking lot, but I felt like I was a world removed because I didn't see those players walking in the hallways between classes. I didn't see them in the classroom at lunch. I didn't get a chance to get updated on, hey, practice got changed to this time or that time. I always felt it was a huge, huge disadvantage. And we know that there's lots of coaches out there that don't work in the school. They maybe have another job and they come in and they're coaching after school. And to me, that always feels like a challenge. So how important do you feel like it is for you to be in the building? And besides that daily touch on the kids, what else are some of the advantages that you feel like you have by being in the building every day?
Yeah, no. Being in a building is huge. I think because there's so much that kids go through on a daily basis. And a lot of the times you as the coach are someone that they confide in and someone that they trust. And so being able to, whether it is keep them from getting in trouble or keep them on track or check up on them, or they know that your presence is there, so they may not do that dumb thing that they may be thinking about doing. you know, like being in a building is always huge. I know some coaches who aren't in a building, and I don't know their, you know, reality with it, but I do know if I wasn't in the building at my last job and at this job, there's a lot of stuff that would have went on that could have affected the success of our season or our culture or our, you know, kids maybe being kicked out or whatever the case may be, or suspended, you know, like that also can affect your culture and your, you know, your team and your season. And I think that is huge to be able to, you know, be in the building. When I was at, you know, Central Catholic, I, you know, wanted to be in the building so bad that I took a pay cut from the job that I was at just to be in the building, you know, like, because I knew if I wanted to build a solid program and I wanted to, you know, have success for a longevity of success, I had to be there every day to be able to, you know, instill in them the characteristics and the standards that I needed for them to have. And I to this day wholeheartedly believe that you can, the first piece of success is you being a part of the community of where you want to have success at. And that comes with being in the school.
All right, let's talk about the opportunity at Cleveland Central Catholic. How do you get that opportunity to become the varsity head coach there at Cleveland Central Catholic?
Yeah, no. So I started coaching at Chanel, where I was before my head coach left and went off to Belize. Another coach got hired and, you know, didn't bring me on. And I was just kind of searching because I knew I wanted to coach and everything like that. All of my friends told me, you're going to be a coach. You're going to be, you know, you're always coaching us, trying to coach us, and you're not even my coach yet. You know, like those type of things. And so, like, I actually end up, you know, exploring it. You know, one of my best friends to this day, he always said, like, man, you know, you're going to be a coach, dude. Like, you're going to be at Chanel coaching while we're all coming back watching you coach. I know it. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not going to be a coach. I don't want to be a coach. Like, and it ended up manifesting itself to me being a coach. And so that's kind of how I got into it. My dad was the freshman coach, and, you know, I was helping him coach. And as my head coach left to go over to Belize, I end up searching, you know, to be a AAU coach. And so Jermaine Gay, who is, you know, my dear friend to this day, he ended up giving me a chance and giving me a team. You know, I didn't care if it was a terrible team, a baby team, a young team. I just wanted to, you know, do my own thing and start coaching, you know. And so I end up getting a team and coaching, and I got into coaching and start, you know, knowing more people. And then I ended up having to coach a team for one of my friends, and it was at Central Catholic. The game was at Central Catholic. And so I ended up going, and, you know, the head coach of Central Catholic then was John Harris, and I was coaching, and, you know, I was a young, fiery, I'm still young, but I was a very young, fiery, you know, coach, and, you know, learned all the things that I learned and all the things that the coaches, you know, taught me, and we were winning and everything. And he stopped me and said, hey, you know, where do you coach at? And I was like, oh, I just coach AAU right now. You know, like, I'm kind of giving, you know, my time to John Hay High School, you know, in the winter, but, you know, it's nothing, you know, serious. And so he's like, well, I want to meet with you about, you know, being maybe a freshman assistant at my school. So I was like, okay, like, let's meet about it, you know. So it was a paid position, and I wasn't being paid to coach at that time. So I was excited about it, you know. And so I was excited to be with a program. And I knew what Central Catholic was about because we played them twice every year at Chanel, and I knew they had great, you know, tradition and history and all of that stuff. And I was excited about it. So I took the job. And as that year, I got in there and had great relationships with guys and ended up being moved up to, like, the JV assistant. And, you know, kind of went from there. And year in and year out, you know, the head coach, you know, after, like, my third year, I think it might have been, the head coach ended up, you know, having some issues at the school. And, you know, midway through the end of the year, he was having more issues, and they end up, you know, parting ways with each other, right before the playoffs. And at that year, I was, you know, the lead assistant, and, you know, I was 22, you know, and the lead assistant, and they end up parting ways a day before, like, the district semifinal game. And, it was, you know, my turn to step up, I guess. I went into the athletic director's office, and, you know, as coaches, we all voted on who should take over, and everybody voted for me, and so I did it. And as I took over, you know, we end up going to the regional semifinal against Poland Seminary and lost by, I want to say, 6 or 8 or something like that. And it was a tragic year for everybody, man. You know, the coach then was, you know, a real big relationship guy. All the kids loved him. And, you know, he was a tough coach, but all the kids loved him. And so it was a lot of tragedy for those guys that had to go through that transition. And so they opened up the job afterwards. I thought I was going to get the job. I really wanted the job. And, you know, I thought I was a shoe-in for it because we had went to the regional semifinal game. And, you know, I'm thinking like, man, you know, who else could have took them to a regional semifinal game? They got to give me the job, right? And so, you know, I end up meeting with the athletic director, and he just goes, you know, like, we're going to open the job up. And, you know, after that, I kind of was like, you know, I was young, but I wasn't dumb. So I'm like,
you saw that writing on the wall, right?
Yeah, I saw the writing on the wall for it. And so I went through the process because I had never really been through the process of being a head coach. And I went through the interviews and, you know, came down to be the last person. You know, it came down to me and another guy, and they end up giving the other guy the job and wanted me to stay on with them. And I end up not staying on and going over to Cuyahoga Community College and starting to coach them. But, and then after I left there for a year, they end up calling me back and asking me to take the job, at Central Catholic. And I, you know, I interviewed and, you know, got the job and at 23 and started to, you know, kind of take off. You know, I kind of knew exactly what I wanted. I knew exactly what, how I wanted to do things. I reached out to my assistant coach when I played, Chuck Russo and Anthony Gabriel, and those guys came over with me and kind of was, you know, a backbone for me to progress through it through you know my early years of coaching. And I think, you know, I had success because I had those guys. And as I had those guys continuing to help me, we had success because we did things the right way. It was a tough place to be at to build and win. But, you know, we did it. And, you know, with a testament to my staff and to those players that are like family to me today, you know, it was because of them. They bought into a 23-year-old and what I wanted and how I wanted to do it. And, you know, I'm successful today because of those guys.
What's something that right from the beginning you feel like you were pretty good at? When you think back to that first year as a varsity coach at Central Catholic, what's a coaching skill or some aspect of coaching that you feel like right from the beginning you had a pretty good handle on?
I think it goes back to what I said about going through like a roller coaster of my years in high school of, you know, starting, not starting, you know, wanting to do more as a basketball player than what I was able to do. And, you know, we were extremely structured where we were at, and which is not a bad thing. But, you know, as kids, you always want to do more, you know, and you always want to be the guy. You always want to be that guy that's averaging 20 and all of that stuff. And so, like, those were realistic things for me in high school. And so as I was going on the roller coaster in high school, you know, I went through some of the same stuff that kids go through today. And me being 23 at the time, taking over a program, I understood what kids were going through. I was able to relate to those kids on a level for them to understand that that I understood, you know, and I'm trying to help them as best as they can to be and get and reach the things that they need to reach and to buy into being a part of something bigger than themselves. And you know, because it was coming from me at such a young age, and because I was, you know, imploring those guys to buy into those things, I think they were just like, okay, well, he went through some of the same stuff, you know, like he's done some of the same stuff and had success, you know, buying into, you know, a system, buying into what a coach says and playing as hard as they possibly can play for something bigger than themselves. And because they saw and they were able to, you know, hear me and relate to me, I think that's the biggest thing that I was able to do when I was first starting out, was just relate and have open lines of communication. You know, the one thing that I don't think that I had when I was in high school was an open line of communication to my head coach to be able to express how I felt. And I always knew that I wanted to have an open line of communication, you know, with my players, you know, whether it's good or bad, and be able to be, you know, and have tough conversations with them. Even when they didn't want to hear it, I always told myself that I was going to tell them what they needed to hear, not what they wanted.
That's a really good answer, especially when you start talking about as a young coach and your ability to relate to those guys who you're only 6, 7, 8 years older than some of them, maybe even less at a certain point. And being able to have those connections means so much, and it continues to mean so much. No matter whether you're a young coach starting out in your career or you're a veteran that's been around for 30 years, I think those relationships, like we talked about earlier, are really, really important. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. So to follow up on that question of what were you good at, what's something that you feel like, man, I've gotten a lot better at that since my first year?
I think it might have been just like, if we're talking basketball, like I think game managing and, you know, knowing what to do in situations that are turning points in games. You know, like when I was 23, sometimes I got caught watching the game instead of coaching it, you know. And I think that now I do a better job of just staying locked in and focused on, you know, every single possession, you know, not letting possessions go with me not being locked in and knowing exactly what I want accomplished every single possession. And back then, I think it was more so, you know, I was giving possessions up because I wasn't managing them, you know, and I'm not saying that I've got you know, when you overcoach, you can overcoach some time and be, you know, overly coaching in the game. But like, I wasn't as focused with, you know, every possession and knowing what we wanted to accomplish and having a game plan for every single game, you know. And I think that I do a better job of that now, is making sure that no matter who we play, there is a game plan and what we're, how we're trying to attack them and what we're trying to do against them to be successful. And back then I was just hoping the players were good enough to get me a win, you know. And I mean, we had our structure, we had what we were doing offensively and defensively, but I don't think I did a good enough job, you know, being detailed in game planning.
How did you develop that philosophy of play as a young coach? Where are you getting stylistically the way you want to play offense, what you want to do defensively? Are you building that from the coaches that you played for? Are you building that from the coaches that you worked with? How are you incorporating the things that you've learned heading into that opportunity until you feel like, hey, this is really the way we want to play? How long did it take you to kind of get a feel for that? And where did your initial thoughts on philosophy come from?
Yeah, so I'm really big on changing, you know, year to year with who we have. You know, we have some core values in what we do defensively and some things that we may do offensively, but I'm really big on changing year to year, you know. Like, a lot of people are like, and it's nothing wrong with it, but a lot of people have their offense and how they want to run it and what they want to do, and they're putting kids inside of that, you know, like, and that's all cool, you know, like if it works for you, great. But for me, I think I'm more so of a person that wants to change yearly with who we have. And if we have some of the similar guys, then maybe we don't need to change, you know, that much. But, you know, stylistically, when I first started, you know, coaching, of course, I heavily relied on, you know, my coaches that that coached me in high school. Coach Russo was huge, and he still is huge, in what we were doing offensively and how we wanted to attack teams offensively. And, you know, I was always a pretty good defensive player. So I kind of, you know, was able to, you know, spearhead a lot of what we did defensively. And as I went through my first couple of years, that's kind of how we did things. But as I grew as a coach and continue to grow as a coach, I've really become, like I said in the beginning, I just become, you know, I want to do things the way of what we have as far as kids. So if we have a certain type of kid, then I want to play, you know, that style that's going to help us, you know, bring out the best in that kid, you know, like, and I want to play to be able, and I want to be able to change, you know, to be able to change every single year if I need to, depending on the type of players we have, you know. And I think this year, you know, at West, you know, I wasn't able to play the way I wanted to play, but we were able to change and do things that were able to help the style of players that we had. And that's just who I am. I mean, offensively now, I'm a real big studier. I watch basketball daily, all day long. I study, you know, college coaches, and I study NBA coaches, and I study other high school coaches. And a real big, you know, influential person for me is, you know, Coach Cindia at Kent State. And, you know, he does a lot of great different things every single year with his guys, and being able to watch those practices and go and watch how he implements different things and how he emphasizes different things every single year, and his practices and how he gets things done has always been influential to me. And I've been able to do that yearly and build relationships with those guys, and you know, kind of tweak it to what we have, but, you know, be able to use everything that I learned from, you know, picking up on different concepts and what different coaches believe, to what I see, like I said, from Coach Cindy, and how I played when I was at Chanel, and, you know, some of the things that, you know, that the new school of basketball is doing, trying to incorporate all of that every year into what we have. And I think it kind of builds up to, you know, your style.
In order to be able to do that, obviously, as you said, if you're going to be changing styles and doing different things, you obviously have to be educating yourself all the time. And that's what you're talking about when you're going to a college practice, when you're watching and studying game film of other high school coaches, when you're watching games in college on TV, and you're trying to pick up little things that you can add and incorporate. To me, that's kind of a fun way to coach, where you obviously want to tailor what you do to your personnel to a large degree. And you, as you said, there are some coaches that maybe make some tweaks, but they have their system and they have the way that they play, and they kind of just put the players into that system. And then you have other coaches where you look at your personnel and you say, okay, this team maybe is going to be a team that can play pressure man-to-man defense. Oh, this team we have, I'm not so sure we can do that. Maybe we need to play a little bit more zone. Maybe this team's up tempo, and maybe the next team you have, we're better off walking it up and playing half court offense. So I think to be able to be that flexible, you have to be able to get out and educate yourself and make sure that you have a wide array of knowledge so that you can look at the X's and O's, look at your talent that you have on hand, and figure out, okay, what's going to be the best way for this team to win. And one thing I will say about that, and I'm sure you'd echo this, is it makes year to year, it makes things more interesting, right? Because you know that, hey, we got to figure this thing out and really tailor what we do to our personnel. It's not just coming in and being like, all right, we got the first 4 weeks of practice plans already written because we do the same thing every year. When you're coming in and you're teaching different things based on your personnel, to me, that would keep coaching fresh and interesting every single year. I don't know if you feel that way or not.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it gives me a, you know, a little anxiety almost, but it gives me, you know, it's fun for me every year to try different things, you know, and take that into a season and make it work, because you have to continue to learn about those things that you're trying to implement and how you're going to practice it and how you're going to drill it every day and, you know, get better at it so you can be as effective as possible. And I think that is the fun part every single year is that you're able to, you know, have something new that you want to try. So you have to learn it and you have to be able to teach it, and then being able to, you know, give it to the kids for them to carry it out. It's fun. It's a fun thing every single year, you know, trying to get your coaches on board with it and get them to believe in it and get them to want to, you know, teach it with the same passion that you have. And I think that is that, like you said, that's the fun part. That's of continuing to learn every year and continuing to want to try different things and be confident to try different things. You know, like we go at it with our coaches with different things that we want to try, but that's good. You know, like our coaches have their own mindsets and they have their own things that they want us to do. And, you know, it's always fun in coaches meetings because we challenge each other in some of the things that we want to do, you know, and at the end of the day, it makes it tough for me because I've got to, kind of sift through all of the suggestions and all of the things that we should do. And, you know, trying to take everybody's advice and make it what's best for our kids. And I think that's the fun part too, is getting everybody on board to one common goal of what you're going to do every year.
Definitely a huge role as a head coach, right? You want to have those arguments behind closed doors. And as soon as you step out of the coach's office, everybody, players, parents, school community, has to see everybody on the same page, so that everybody's rowing that boat in the same direction. If you have situations where, and I'm sure that we've all unfortunately heard about those, where you have coaching staff who are kind of at odds with one another, things can go south really, really quickly. So you had an opportunity at Central Catholic. You have a great run there, and you're having a tremendous amount of success. How does the opportunity at Lutheran West come to you? What's the internal thought process like when you start thinking about leaving Central Catholic, taking the Lutheran West job? What was attractive to you about that job?
Well, you know, COVID was a killer for a lot of different, you know, high schools. You know, like I think it was the downfall for a lot of different high schools. And when I was at Central, and, you know, and it wasn't just COVID, but COVID was kind of like the last straw. But I think, you know, when you're there and you want to have a certain level of success, you need everybody in the whole community, in the whole school, to be on the same page as you of the success that you want to have, you know, or you can become stagnant and you can become, you know, a place where you get content with what you're doing. And, you know, I'm still at an age where, you know, I've got aspirations of what I want to do on the high school level and how I want to build certain things and what I want to do with certain things. And, you know, it didn't align for me in Central after a while. And, you know, at that time, you know, I stepped down and I was looking at different places, and, you know, I got a call and about, you know, if I was interested in being a part of Lutheran West and hearing them out and everything and going from there. And I did. I heard them out, and I didn't know if I was going to take it because I didn't know the level of success that they wanted to have. And once I met with the superintendent, Chris, and I met with the principal, Mike, and our AD, Ryan, their vision for where they wanted Lutheran West align with what I wanted in a program and what I wanted in a community. And, you know, Lutheran West gives me the same vibe that I had when I was at Chanel, as far as a community that has kind of, you know, everything that you want. You know, you have all walks of life. You got all, you know, backgrounds, all ethnicities in the school. And you got a administration who wants to be successful. And, you know, those things align to success. And it's something that I wanted. And, you know, once I found out that they were serious about winning and serious about you know, building their programs up to be equal with their academics. I was extremely excited. And then I took a tour and saw the campus, and it was beautiful, and the things that they have, working to enhance the campus and build on it. You know, I'm super excited about those things. And, it's just the support, factor in it all, you know, like having a principal and an AD and a superintendent who are super supportive in what you're doing and have your back 100% in every situation is, you know, unheard of almost in some places. And for us to have that alignment, you know, it's a perfect situation for me.
When you say that they're as serious about winning as you are, when I hear that, I'm thinking in my head, okay, what does that mean? So when you're in the interview process and you're going through and you're on the campus tour and you're walking around with them, what are some of the questions that you're asking them, or what are some of the things that they're sharing with you that make you know that they're going to be on the same page with you when it comes to building a winning high school basketball program?
Yeah, well, I'd say it's resources. I'd say it's the support in, you know, being able to, build your kids and being able to have the resources to know where to go and to talk to families about, you know, Lutheran West, and being able to be a part of those meetings in the admissions rooms and being able to be a part of the grind and accepting the right kids for the programs and things of that nature that, you know, I wasn't able to be in a room with at Central Catholic, you know, like, and we were accepting who they wanted us to accept, and we were just kind of like, okay, well, we got to deal with this, you know, like, and for a while it worked, you know, but I wanted to be a part of, you know, the decision making and when it comes to bringing in kids and being able to have kids come to your school and be successful there, and the resources that they have to be successful, and the things that they're willing to do as far as, you know, for the growth of those kids that we have to get better, you know, all of those things aligned with what my vision was for a program, you know. And I think it is a great school with a great academic base to be able to attract people to our facility, you know. And then it's about winning at that point. You got to be able to win to continue to attract kids to the school. We're a private school. So as a private school, our job is to bring kids in and be able to, you know, get kids to want to be at our school, you know. And that's how we survive. That's how we are able to you know, have a check when it's time to get paid, you know, is by having those kids, you know, want to be a part of Lutheran West. And that comes from winning, and, you know, more kids want to be a part of a winning culture, and they see that. And, you know, you start to, you know, build and have the relationship with different people around the communities. And, you know, they have relationships with other parents, and they recommend Lutheran West to their parents and, I mean, to their friends. And, you know, you have those resources like that by just having the support from your administration.
Thinking back to those first few days on the job, after you decide, hey, I'm accepting the job, now I got to get to work, what were some of the first steps that you took to build that winning culture that you're talking about? Was it conversations with players? Was it conversations with parents? What did you see as the most important things you had to get done in the first couple weeks after you took the job at Lutheran West?
Well, the first couple weeks when I took the job, I knew we had to build depth in our program. We had to build depth in getting better basketball players and getting more skilled basketball players, more athletic basketball players with what we already had, you know. And the first part was is figuring out how we were going to do that, and then putting a plan together to do that. But then the other thing was is that, you know, I had to build trust in our community and our kids that we already had, that, you know, I'm here to be able to enhance their game and to make this into a positive, you know, situation for them as well, you know. And I think building trust is always hard because you never know what people's real intentions are. And I had to do that with a lot of my players that I were that I grew and have grown to love now I just had to build trust with them. I had to be in the gym with them. I had to show them what I knew and show them that I cared about them and show them that, you know, I'm here to, you know, to build the best program for Lutheran West. And I think, you know, once we were able to do that as a staff, that's when our success started to take off. And I think that's the reason why we had the success we had this year is because we were able to build that trust with the current players that were already there that came back.
When you talk about trying to improve your talent base and have better players be a part of your program, as a private school, it's not like when you're at a public school where you have this built-in feeder system where you can get involved in your youth program as a varsity coach. And I'm going down and I'm influencing the coaches who are coaching my third, fourth, fifth, sixth graders. I'm getting to know those kids from the time they're in elementary school as a public school varsity basketball head coach. So from a private school standpoint, just talk a little bit about how you try to identify players that might be interested in attending Lutheran West and just what that process looks like of making sure that you have a program that's attractive that makes players want to come and attend school at Lutheran West and be a part of your program.
Yeah. So, like you said, like we don't have a feeder school to where we're able to kind of just sit back and let kids come through and build with the kids that we have, in our, you know, middle schools or whatever the case may be. So we actually do have to kind of go out and seek, you know, kids to be able to come to our school. And I think the process in that and how we're able to do that is, you know, we have to work through our admissions team, you know, like our admissions that when I talked about being aligned, our admission team does a lot of the work when it comes to bringing kids in, you know, like they talk to kids. They are influential in, you know, getting the paperwork done with kids and everything like that. You know, OSHA put so many rules on us, you know, as far as recruiting and stuff like that to where it makes it difficult. But when you have an admissions, you know, team that is, you know, very invested on the school being the best school it can be, it makes it a little bit easier, you know, like you're able to send, you know, your admissions team to represent the school into, you know, middle schools that have the better talent and into places that have that has, you know, the better talent to be able to put your school on display and not only, speak on athletics, but speak on, you know, all of the other great things that Lutheran West has to offer. You know, like a lot of the time, you know, parents pick schools off of, you know, what the basketball program is, which is completely fine. But if you really want your child to have a holistic, you know, experience in high school, you have to look and see some of the things that the school has to offer that's outside of athletics. And I think that, you know, Lutheran West has so many different things and has such a good culture of, you know, things that keeps kids engaged. You know, it's easier for us to bring kids in and people want to be a part of our programs. And it just took for, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back as coaches, but it just took for us to, you know, put the program on display. And, you know, put them in the right places, the right tournaments, the right summer leagues, you know, have a social media presence, you know, like, and, you know, we see more and more kids that want to be a part of our programs and our admissions team is able to handle the load of kids wanting to be a part of it. And they do a good job of communicating to us who wants to be a part of it. And, you know, we've had some success and, you know, this year, it looks like it's going to be an even better year than it was last year.
All right. So once you have those kids in the program and now you start talking about building success on the floor, what does it look like for you in terms of practice design? How do you go about putting together a practice plan? What's a typical practice look like for you? Do you have some favorite go-to things where you have like a set routine at the beginning of practice or just when you're putting together a practice plan, What does that look like?
Yeah, so no matter what, this is one thing that stays consistent for me. No matter what and no matter who we have, we always try to make our workouts and our practices as competitive as they possibly can be. So we try to make sure that we are putting people in as many uncomfortable positions as possible. Coaches, players, you know, no matter who it is, we try to put them in uncomfortable situations to see who's able to be focused and be locked in any type of situation. And when I am, you know, constructing my practice plan, I always want to make sure that I have, you know, a lot of competitive things on our practice plan to be able to establish that mindset of being able to compete in hostile situations and hostile environments. And I think those things from the start of practice, you know, gives the practice a little bit of energy and the practice kind of takes off from there. So I just like, you know, a lot of other coaches or any other coaches, we have our practice plan, you know, planned out by the minute and, you know, you know, 120 minute practice. We have it planned out by the minute and, it's on our scores table and it's on the clock and everything like that. But, we make sure that we spend a lot of time competing. We make sure we spend a lot of time, you know, putting guys against each other. So not our starting five going against other people. I mean, our other, you know, guys the whole game, or our starting five going against our JV the entire game, the entire practice. Like, we want to split our starting five up, our rotation guys up to make those guys leaders on their own teams, you know, and compete every day against other, you know, other players and see what we can get out of them. And sometimes it's practices that go great, and sometimes there's practices that don't go so great, but it's all the experiences and the moments and the uncomfortability of being in those moments. And I think that is what makes for a successful team and a successful program is being able to construct your practices to compete in everything that you do, whether it's Team O, Team D, individuals, warm-up drills, you know, practice drills, whatever the case may be, if there's always a competitive win-lose aspect in whatever we do.
So are you keeping score in most drills when you're going offense against defense? Does that help to instill the competitiveness that you're talking about?
Yeah, we keep score. Losers run. And, you know, we keep score. We keep some days we keep a running score for the whole day. You know, the whole 120 minute practice, we keep the score, tally running, you know, home and away, you know, like black or white or red and white, whatever, whatever the day calls for. And, sometimes we keep a running total of what it is. And at the end of practice, we run, or, you know, those guys got to bring water for, you know, the other team, or,
right,
you know, they got to clean up or whatever the penalty may be for losing. We have it. And I think, always competing and wanting to win helps you with being able to be in any moment in games.
When you think about that minute-by-minute practice plan, there's usually two different philosophies that I think about when I think about coaches when it comes to practice design. You have the coach, when you have it minute-by-minute, the coach who, we're going for 10 minutes on this drill, and when 10 minutes is up, we just sort of move on because we're not, if it's going great, great. If it's not, we're just going to move on to the next thing. Or are you where, let's say you have 15 minutes planned for shell drill and it's not going the way that you want it to. Do you extend beyond that 15 minutes, or are you, hey, the buzzer goes off at that 15 minutes, we're moving on to whatever the next thing is we have on the practice plan? Which one more closely fits sort of your approach to that?
Yeah. So I've been both of those guys. I get really engulfed. That's why it has to be on the scores table, on the clock, because I'll stay in a segment the whole practice if they let me, you know, because it's kind of not what I want. It's not how I want it done. It's the energy isn't where I want it. The, and, you know, and sometimes, you know, my guys have to, you know, my Chuck Russo, my assistant coach, has to say, all right, let's move on, coach. Like, or, you know, one of my coaches that I coached when I was younger, you know, at John Hay, he's on my staff now. He'll come behind me and say, let it go. You know, like, and, you know, I'll snap back into reality and move on, you know, like, and there's some times where, you know, I just know in my head, I'm just like, we don't have it today. We got to just get through this practice and get something out of it and, you know, and try again another day, you know, but, it's a collective mindset when it comes to that piece of it, you know, like, and more often than not, it's my assistants telling me to move on.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about your staff. When you're working with your staff, when you're putting together the plan for how you're going to approach a practice, how you're going to approach the entire season, how you're going to approach a game, how do you figure out what you're going to delegate or how you assign roles with your coaching staff? So there's obviously some coaches out there that they have an assistant coach who's in charge of the offense and one who's in charge of the defense, or maybe somebody handles special situations. Then you have other coaching staffs where everybody's kind of coaching everything and can have a hand in different things. So how do you approach how you organize your staff, for lack of a better way of saying it?
Yeah, no, I think you have to know the strengths and weaknesses of your coaches, you know. And you have to know what they're capable of doing and what they're not capable of doing. You can't give someone a job and they're just not capable of doing that right now, you know, doing the job that you want them to do. So when you look at every year and what you give your coaches to do, you have to look at what their best attributes are. And we've got some strong-minded coaches on our staff, which I love. And we've got some guys who don't want to say much on our staff. And, you know, we've got some guys who, you know, are going to just, you know, be there to help in whatever, you know, role that they're asked to help in. And I think for the most part, when you are giving roles out, you have to be able to give roles out with the understanding, with them understanding that it's their role to do it, but it's my role to make sure it's done the way I want it done. You know, like, and so you can give them that role, but you also have to make sure that you oversee it, because at the end of the day, it's you who's on the line for it, right? And so when I give out roles to my guys, I always, you know, let them handle it, but I oversee it to the point where, you know, they know that I'm overseeing it. And, you know, like, I'm not a big, you've got the offense, you've got the defense, you've got this, you've got that. You know, I kind of handle offense, defense, or what I want to put in. And I kind of give those guys roles to make sure that they are paying attention to the details of what makes that really good. So if I'm giving you, Mike, the defense, I want you to make sure that you are looking at the details of the whole entire, you know, defense of whatever we call. If we're pressing, you know, our guys up line to be able to shoot gaps. If we're half court man to man, you know, and we're up line, our guys, you know, pressuring the ball the right way, or we're in the right rotations. If we're in pack line man to man, our guys in gaps, you know, like, so like, I give those guys, you know, maybe they may be the defensive coach, but they're more so in tune with the details of how to make it the best it can be. And vice versa with offense as well.
That makes a lot of sense when you have everybody. It goes to, again, your role as the head coach to make sure, and you mentioned it off the top, that you want to make sure that your coaches understand what it is that you're trying to teach and how you're trying to teach it. And once you have your staff with that in hand, then they can do what you just described, which is they can be focused in on those details. But they first have to understand what it is that you as the head coach want to have taught, and then the methodology and the vocabulary and all those kinds of things that go along with that. to make sure that you're teaching that part of it. When you think about hiring a staff and you're looking for somebody to be a part of it, what's the most important characteristic or one or two characteristics that you look for that are, you say, hey, these are must have things for a guy who's going to be part of my staff?
Yeah. I'm looking for, you know, loyalty and loyalty, not in the aspect of, you know, do what I say, do loyalty, you know, like, but loyalty in the aspect of just being upfront and understanding, you know, everybody's roles that are on staff and understanding, you know, what we're trying to accomplish and not have any ulterior motives of being on staff and stuff like that. I'm looking for energy and I'm looking for, you know, knowledge of the game, and I'm looking for you to have aspirations, you know, like I want you to want to be a head coach one day, unless you just don't want to be, you know, like at this point in time in my life, I'm really not hiring anybody else who just wants to be an assistant coach. You know, like I have, you know, two guys who just want to be assistant coaches, and they're my assistants on the varsity level, you know, like, and they've done what they wanted to do with basketball and they just want to be assistants. Anybody else that I'm hiring, I want you to want to be a head coach, you know, because I want you to want to learn and I want you to want to have the passion to be at practice every day as if you are a head coach, you know, like, so I do a lot of hiring of young guys, of younger coaches, or coaches my age, that have aspirations to be a head coach and run their own program. Not so much so that they can learn from me. Maybe they do learn something from me, but with the aspiration for them to get the opportunity to be in situations to have to make decisions. And that is the biggest piece of running a program, is you have to make decisions every single day quickly. You know, you have to make in-game adjustments. You have to make decisions with practices, decisions with kids, decisions with coaches. You have to be able to make those decisions. And I want, you know, aspiring coaches to be able to have those opportunities. And when I'm looking for coaches, I don't want, you know, anybody that just wants to be there, you know, like I want guys to have goals and dreams to one day run their own program and one day be their own head coach and want to, whether or not learn from me or learn from somebody else that may be older than me on staff, or just, you know, learn from being in the midst of making those decisions. You know, like I think that, that is what I look for when someone says, hey, I want to coach, you know, and those are the questions that I ask in the interview. I can care less about, you know, your X's and O's of what plays you like to run or what style of defense you like to run or what play you would call in the last 10 seconds and all of that stuff. I don't care about that stuff. Like I really care about, you know, what that person's dreams and goals are when it comes to the game of basketball.
To go along with that, and it kind of goes to the roles that you assign to your coaches and kind of how you utilize your staff. When you think about the off season and summer workouts and the different things, how much responsibility do you give to your assistant coaches as you're kind of overseeing your off season program? Describe for us a little bit of what you guys do in the off season to help your players get better individually and then to help your team obviously get better for next season.
Yeah, no, I'm still young. So like, I am still extremely hands-on, and that's probably something that I could probably get better at, is allowing them to take more of more initiative in the summer to be in control of those things. But like we said earlier, there's so many new things that, you know, I want to try, whether it's technique, whether it's, you know, terminology, whether it's concepts that I have to be there to teach. I don't really give them enough opportunity to really run things the way they want to run. And I think that's the benefit of doing things the same way over and over again. You're able to give assistants a little bit more power in running things, because it should be the same thing over and over again. But you know, I do have, you know, a few of our guys, they are in control of workouts or open gyms and how we structure our workouts. And, you know, I'll meet with them about, you know, our guys and let them know, you know, this is what I want to see them get better at. And this is what I want to see them, you know, excel at a little bit more, you know, next season. And then it's up to them to kind of construct their workout plans to getting better at that and taking over the responsibility of, you know, reaching out to our guys and having conversations about what I want and what I need them to get better at, and giving them the ownership to, you know, hold them accountable of getting better at it. So when it's time for the season, I can say, hey, coach, did this guy get better at this? Was he in lifting? Was he, you know, doing skill development with you? What did you guys work on? What do you see him getting that he's gotten better at? Can I move him from a forward to a guard now, or can you know, I put him in the post and you know, throw the ball inside to the post? Does he have post moves now? Like, you know, like those type of things that I give my assistants you know, in the summer to get better at and to want to do. And in the summer is our time to suggest, you know, our assistants' time to suggest what to do offensively and what to do defensively with the new group coming in, you know, and that's their time to really show me, you know, concepts and show me what they're thinking and what we could have did or what they thought we should have done, you know, and kind of go from there. So
how do you split your time between skill development and run up and down and playing 5-on-5 during the summertime?
Yeah, open gym's always bad basketball. you know, like, so, but you also have to have it, you know, like, again, OSHA has so many rules to you coaching and all of that type of stuff, you know, throughout the year. You have to have it. And I think open gym's serviceable for the competing aspect of it, you know, like I try to make open gyms as hostile as possible, you know, like we don't have fouls in our open gyms, you know, like the coaches are the only people who call calls in open gyms, you know, like we, you could call it cheating, but we give an advantage to certain people to see the reactions of certain people, you know, like, and, you know, just make it competitive and give them hostile environments to be a part of, to be able to have to deal with and navigate themselves through. And you start to see people's mental toughness and because they can't win a game that day, or you start to see, you know, kids break down and have attitudes and, you know, kind of, you know, fizzle out, spaz out. And you have to, you know, really, it gives you an opportunity to teach those kids when it really doesn't matter. And so I think open gyms are serviceable. And I think skill development is serviceable, but I'm always going to choose competing over, you know, having hundreds and hundreds of days of skill development, you know, like too many times we got our kids going to trainers and paying for trainers. And there's nothing wrong with trainers, don't get me wrong. But like, I'm just a huge, you know, competitor. I want you to play against somebody always, you know. And I think that helps you more in game and for college more than anything else.
That makes a ton of sense. I want to ask you one final question here before we start to wrap up. And that is a two-parter. Part one, when you look ahead from right now over the next year or two, what do you see as being the biggest challenge you have in front of you? So part one, your biggest challenge. And then part two, when you think about what you get to do every day, waking up as the head basketball coach at Lutheran West High School, what's your biggest joy that you get from what you get to do day in and day out? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
My biggest challenge moving forward is to continue to work through the community that you know that I'm in now. It's a brand new community, it's a brand new area, and to continue to try to bring back some of our alumni and get them on board with what we're doing, and you know, continue to bring in you know, kids who help our culture and help our school, and you know, going out in the community to be able to, you know, show my face and let the community of, you know, Rocky River and Fairview and all of those cities that are surrounding cities, know that what we're doing and know that we are a program that wants to be in the community and wants to be the face of our community. And, you know, working through that and getting to know different people and getting to know different connections that may be in that city and in those surrounding cities. And I think that is going to be my challenge to figure out how to go about doing that and getting Lutheran West basketball, you know, to a point where everyone knows about it and getting it to the point where everyone knows where the school is and what the school is about. And, you know, the faith, of what we believe in and how hard we work to get our kids to understand and tap into their faith and tap into their abilities to do the right thing on an everyday basis. And I think that is my biggest, you know, challenge of what I have to do and what steps I have to take next. It's not just about winning basketball games. It's more so about continuing to win the community over and continue to try to be the face of Lutheran West and try to be the face of, you know, our community and be the standard for what, you know, programs are at Lutheran West and other schools. And I think that is my challenge. Those are my goals. Those are my aspirations of what I want to do next. And they're attainable. It's just putting in the work and doing what I need to do to tap into those things. So it's going to be a challenge, but I'm up for it. And I can't wait to continue to do it and to take this program to where I know it can be and where it deserves to be. For the second part of your question, my biggest joy is just being able to, you know, praise God that I am able to wake up every single day and do what I really love to do. It's a lot of people in this world that don't get a chance to wake up and do what they really want to do. And I'm blessed to be able to wake up every day and worry about coaching basketball and worry about what my next steps are to, you know, coaching basketball and where my life will be with coaching basketball. And I don't know what else I could do and what I'd be good at doing. And I just thank God that I have the opportunity every day to be able to work with people who care about the same things that I care about, who care about the same things as far as impacting the youth like I care about. And I think that is my biggest joy, is being able to wake up every single day, go to a community where they want to impact kids' lives, whether it's through athletics or academics or, you know, just interaction with kids every single day. And I don't think I can say it enough that I'm blessed, and I praise God for being able to do those things every single day. And I don't plan on doing anything else for the rest of my life besides impacting kids and, you know, coaching a game of basketball or being around a game of basketball. And, you know, I thank, you know, Central Catholic and Lutheran West for giving me the opportunity to be able to do what I'm passionate about and what I love.
Being able to get up and do what it is that you love every single day, there's nothing better than that. I think you said it well when you said that you're able to coach basketball and you're able to use the game to be able to have an impact on young people's lives. And I think that's one of the things that's most satisfying. When I think about what I've done in the game as a coach, it always comes back to what impact have I been able to have on the kids that have come through my basketball camps or the kids that I've coached when I was a high school coach or the kids that I've coached in AAU. You always hope that you're able to have an impact on them beyond the basketball floor. And I think that's a really, really good answer and one that I think most coaches out there can certainly relate to. Before we wrap up, Jordan, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, how they can find out more about your program, whether you want to share email, social media, website, whatever you think is the best way for people to connect with you and find out more about what you're doing at Lutheran West.
Yeah. You can follow my social medias, my Instagrams, and you can follow the school's Instagrams or the school social media as far as Twitter. And if you want to, you know, donate, you can email. If you want to, you know, be a part of our program, you can email. If you want to, you know, connect with our program to have us, you know, do something in the community or be a part of events, you can email me. I'm going to give you those emails and those handles right now. My email is jduke@lutheranwest.com. It's very simple. I'm glad that they made it that way. and my Twitter handle is, I'll give you my personal and I'll give you the school's. My personal Twitter handle is at the letter J and my last name Duke, D-U-K-E, and it is 2 underscores. And then my school's basketball handle is at LW underscore MBBALL. So I'll say that again. At Lutheran, I'm sorry, at LW underscore MBBALL. And my, I've given you my email again. That is at jduke@lutheranwest.com.
We will have all that in the show notes, so everybody will be able to find it there. Jordan, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us tonight. Been a pleasure getting an opportunity to have a conversation with you. You and I have talked here and there at AAU practice, but it's always fun to be able to have an hour and 20-minute conversation and really get the chance to dive in and know somebody. So I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to be a part of it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.